This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Rose Oconee Historical Society. I've read several stories from Bert Wenner's account of his life in Rose Oconee from the 1920s and during the Depression years. He also wrote about how World War II affected his family of five brothers and their parents. Here is that part of his story. When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor in December 1941, I was getting a Christmas tree at our neighbor's farm. As I walked through the Mackenzies' yard toting a tree, young Walter came bursting out of their house and asked me to join them in front of their antique table radio to hear some distressing news. Of course, we were all aware of unsettling events such as the German occupation of Austria and the Sudetenland, the Japanese invasion of China, the American Lend-Lease program for the United Kingdom, and the beginnings of a military buildup at home. Yet, we were shocked by the scale, suddenness, and severity of the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. At the school the next day, the entire student body was assembled in the gymnasium to hear President Roosevelt's declaration of war on Japan and its allies, including Germany. It was a somber day indeed. Very soon, the federal government declared a national emergency, and Congress granted President Roosevelt special powers. Boards and commissions were quickly established to oversee the war effort, including creating new military installations, inducting troops into the armed services, rationing essential materials, converting factories to armament production, and fixing prices on goods to prevent inflation. Winton, who had begun study at Gustavus Adolphus College, joined the Army and became an electronics specialist stationed in Georgia, where he also organized and directed an army band. 2 years later, in 1943, Harry joined the Navy and also specialized in electronics. He spent a couple of years on a Navy flagship, the USS Estes, in the Pacific during the height of Allied recovery of that region. Then in March 1945, I was drafted into the Army and given a three-month deferment to finish high school. Adrian joined the Navy upon his graduation in 1946 and also became an electronic technician stationed on a destroyer off the California coast. Ward entered an ROTC program at the University of Utah in 1947. In 1951, he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Marines. I attended his graduation and we went together to California. Ward served in the Marine Artillery during the Korean War, where he was wounded in action, decorated for his heroism, and rose to the rank of captain. Later, Mike and Alan also served tours in the armed services, both of them spending time in Germany. Mike intercepted and translated coded messages for the Air Force, and Alan was an ordnance officer in the Army. Following the U.S. declaration of war on December 8, 1941, conditions rapidly changed on the home front. New car production stopped abruptly in 1942, and gasoline, coffee, sugar, and other products were rationed. Coupon books and plastic coins were used to control purchases. Non-essential drivers were limited to 4 gallons of gas a week, with government and commercial drivers entitled to somewhat more, depending on their required tasks. Prices were controlled to discourage inflation, and progressive income taxes were increased to as high as 75% to pay for the war. At the high school, new courses such as aeronautics and pre-induction were added to make students better informed on subjects relevant to the war effort. Because Rose Oconee was on the Canadian border, an air raid observation hut was installed on the roof of the school building. Farmers were encouraged to grow essential crops, and students were asked to participate in a victory corps to assist farmers or to work part-time in other critical industries or activities that were losing workers to the military services and defense plants. The scale of the war was eventually expanded to include most of the world, and the need for troops and civilian support services kept growing. Most physically fit men up to the age of 36 served in the armed forces, with limited exemptions for farmers, others playing critical roles on the home front, and persons with physical and mental disabilities. During our senior year, both Harry and I took exams for pilot and navigator training, passed them, and were sent to Fort Snelling and St. Paul for physical exams. Both of us were disqualified because of insufficient color perception. This finding was a surprise and disappointment to both of us. Tests today would show that we are color weak, only on pastel shades of red and green, not color blind, and have little trouble distinguishing most colors. So Harry chose the Navy as a sailor, and I resigned myself to the Army draft already in process. Ironically, this turned out to be a good decision. I traveled from Roseau by bus to Fort Snelling for induction and noted that following our physical exams, everyone's assignment form was stamped infantry, regardless of skills or previous civilian experience. Then I was off to Jefferson Barracks in St. Louis, and a week later transported in a converted freight car to Camp Fannin near Tyler, Texas. Camp Fannin was a huge temporary complex of wallboard huts and mess halls used for training 25,000 infantrymen simultaneously, each cohort for 13 weeks. Training was very rigorous and realistic, intended to make combat soldiers of all of us. We were organized into platoons, companies, battalions, and regiments, and drilled for perhaps 60 or more hours a week, including Saturdays, nighttime exercises, and Sunday inspections. We had 10-mile hikes with the 20-pound packs, plus rifles and spare boots, dug foxholes, invaded mock villages, crawled under barbed wire with live machine guns firing overhead, and learned to shoot various types of weapons, ranging from rifles to bazookas. I had only one Sunday of leave to see the nearby city of Tyler in this entire period. All of this took place in the East Texas summer heat. Many of the recruits intermittently passed out during marches and were unceremoniously hoisted into the back of a truck that followed us with food rations. I later learned that we were being trained for the invasion of Japan and that a few casualties in Texas were deemed far preferable to thousands of them in an invasion with green troops. Within a few years after the war, the camp was totally dismantled and the area reverted to farmland with only a plaque to confirm its previous existence. Thanks to Bert Wenner for writing his memories, and thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county's stories.